morning, everyone. January 6th, meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. First item on the agenda is executive session. Pursuant to RCW 4230.110.1i, the commission will meet in executive session to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency litigation or potential litigation in which the agency is or is likely to become a party. No action will be taken in executive session, and the public is not permitted to attend the executive session. We will be meeting in the director's conference room because our director is going to be calling in from San Diego. And we will reconvene at 9:30 here in this room. Okay, we're adjourned. We're in recess. Ready to go? Okay, we've completed our executive session, and we can move on to agenda item 2, which is our call to order. I wanted to take this opportunity to welcome our two new commissioners on board, Jay Kenney from OMAC and Larry Carpenter from Mount Vernon.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Do you want to say anything to just say hello, introduce yourself a little bit?
I'm just looking forward to serving on the commission. I think it's going to be really interesting, and you know, I'm excited about it. Mm-hmm. So
good to have you. Larry?
Well, I look forward as a very distinct honor to participate with all of you. I have great respect for the work the commission's done, and I hope I can continue to participate in the progress for the state citizens.
Right. Yeah, we're back to full strength, and that's great. Welcome aboard. First item, Commissioner Duvia?
Yeah, I'd like to just welcome on board, and we really appreciate you joining us because we believe in a full allocation of the workload. And so,
so I'm sure they'll bring a lot of intelligence and energy to the commission. Okay, we've got just one set of minutes before us. Behind tab 2. It's the November 18th conference call meeting. Does anyone have any amendments to make, any corrections to make to the minutes? Commissioner Duvia, do you want to make a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we accept the meetings as read on for November 18th, 2011.
Do I hear a second?
Second. I would second.
Motion's been made and seconded to approve the November 18th, 2011 meeting minutes. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Okay. Commissioner's discussion. Anyone want to bring anything forward? Commissioner Schmitten.
Chair, I'll start. And let me echo the welcome aboard to Larry and Jay. It's going to be great to work with you guys and great to have you on the team. The first thing I have to report on is January 2nd, perhaps for the first time, at least to my knowledge, the Upper Columbia River was closed to all steelhead fishing, and that starts just south of Wenatchee at Rock Island Dam, goes all the way up to Chief Joseph Dam at Bridgeport. That would include then the Wenatchee River, the Aniat River, the Methow River, and the entire stretch of the Columbia between those areas. The reason given for the closure is that the department's running out of ESA native fish impacts, and so it is a conservation issue. Those impacts are provided in our permit with National Marine Fisheries Service. And the catch has been about a 2.5 native fish to one hatchery fish. There's kind of a couple ways to look at this, and it's being fairly well accepted because it has a conservation issue behind it, but the local economies are beginning to worry. One is a half glass, half full look at it, and that would be this is ultimately achieving our goal. Our goal is to delist the wild fish or the native fish, and as you get more of them, that should send a signal that we're doing the right things. The second would be, where are or who is catching the hatchery fish? And a couple of things to look at. One, there were 22,000 fish came over at Wells Dam. That's the point where you count what's in the upper Columbia. 22,000 includes both native and wild fish. I looked at the most recent press report from the Lower Columbia River. 25,000 hatchery fish only caught this season, second largest in history. In August alone, 18,500 total steelhead, that would be native and hatchery, caught in the 1 month alone. So I think that the glass half full look will have to have a pretty serious look in the future. And I just raise this, it's an event that's never occurred before.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Duvia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I've discussed this with some of the commissioners, but I just want to let the full commission know that I'm in the process of working with the staff and trying to build a private cooperative public saving of the Caldwell Hatchery. And the community colleges of Spokane and the county commissioners and local private individuals are trying to come up with a way to financially maintain and continue the Caldwell hatchery, which is, I don't think, technically not closed till June, but right now it's non-operational. So we're going to be working on that diligently in the next couple of months to see if we can get some fry for them in that lake, which would be a net addition to the fisheries. So,
Commissioner Perry?
Thank you.
Could you bring your microphone? Great.
Over the New Year's holiday, I spent quite a bit of time in the Blue Mountains, and there's a lot of anecdotal reports of wolves, people seeing them and so forth, and I don't think they're all wrong. They probably some that are mistaking wolves for coyotes and so forth, but we don't have a recognized wolf pack in the Blue Mountains, yet there still seems to be a lot of reports, and I would hope that maybe the department could spend some time in that area and try to document whether there's packs or not, whether there's breeding pairs or not, as there certainly seems to be a lot of observation by the local folks.
Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, did you want me to comment on our conversation?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
And I forget the day that took place, but
a few weeks ago.
A few weeks ago, the chair and myself and the director, I had were on conference call with the governor's chief of staff.
Marty Loesch. I think is that how you pronounce his name?
Marty Loesch. Regarding the Get Out West initiative that we were brought into the conversation when we met with the governor. And there was a great deal of enthusiasm on the call and looking at how the department can take a leadership role in this initiative. And part of the culmination of this was the first conversation, I think, that will take place of others in the future. But the Western Governors Association is meeting in Washington in the spring. And I kind of left the conversation then that we were invited to participate in some way in that conference, which I forget where it is. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay. In order to either brief or to help develop a further agenda direction for us in Get Out West. So it was a positive conversation. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm within the governor's office, and Phil was enthusiastic as well. So,
yeah, very good. It also relates to the potential of establishing a new committee of the commission that would be what we've discussed in the past. We haven't come to any conclusion about establishing this new committee, but I still am in favor. I think Commissioner Smith is interested in participating, and this would try to address the issues that sometimes divide our constituents on the conservation community side from those who are on the hunting and fishing side, and we want to bring everyone together to the extent we can, find common ground. We've been calling it the Big Tent Committee. I'm hoping our two new commissioners might be interested in participating, given your backgrounds. So, and we've got this specific opportunity with the governor. We were provided with the Get Out West materials, in which the governor's staff have laid out a fairly specific set of action items. And some of them are just directly related to the agency's responsibilities. She's called for a bundling together of a lot of great concepts, like getting youth outdoors, which we support. Just had a conversation with Commissioner Carpenter about that this morning, in which he suggested that we emphasize the youth side of this. So maybe we do pick a little narrow piece of the overall Get Out West concept and really, and as a commission, hone in on what do we do to get youth outside engaged in appreciating wildlife or hunting and fishing, because those are going to be our constituents in the future. I thought that was a terrific idea to just pick that particular item. Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, and a follow-up. As we do look towards establishing a new committee, maybe we could just have an informal committee to start bouncing some of these ideas and see how this will gel into a naming of a said committee.
Okay. But
I wouldn't want to see too much grass grow on this one, because I think it is one of those initiatives that transcends the political initiatives as well as the recreational interest of the state. And I think it could be championed by both gubernatorial candidates. So we would end up being a win-win in any of this.
Very good. Okay. Thanks. Anything else? Before I wanted to bring to the commission's attention the rules of procedure that have been circulated to you all. You were given that in a packet this morning to include in your notebook. We generally like to have a organized way of initiating and orienting the new commissioners into the process of the commission. These rules were rules of procedure have been passed down from time immemorial. If there's any, these are our rules, so we can change them. And I would suggest that you all look at them, see if there's anything in there that you object, and we can bring that up at a future meeting. But these are good. This is a good summary of, in a nutshell, what you need to know as you join the commission, as you start participating in commission meetings. Discusses our relationship with staff to a certain extent. Then, in addition to that, to help orient the new commissioners and refresh the memories of the older commissioners, we asked Bill Freymeyer to assemble a little overview. And Bill, were you going to walk us through this? Was that the idea, or? That's going to be February? Okay. So you can take a look at those. And if there's anything that you need more detail on, let us know before the next meeting. So we can go into the details that you need. Particularly, the new commissioners should take a look at the PowerPoint slides that are included in your booklet. and send any questions that you had, any more additional information needs that you have to me and Tammy, and we'll make sure that they're addressed. During the February meeting, we also thought it was the appropriate time, after we've gone through the orientation, to take up the director's the agreement that we have with the director regarding delegation of authorities. This is an important document, so I urge all the commissioners to put in some serious time looking at all of those authorities that we have permanently delegated, or delegated until we act otherwise, to the director, because this is a big deal, transferring our authorities to the director. The director's not here today because he's in San Diego at an important meeting, so we didn't want to have that discussion without him here. So we're putting that off until February. But you will have the chance to be oriented regarding the laws that we operate under, and that we will go into this discussion of the delegation. Okay. That's all we need. There's no questions. Okay, we can move on then to the director's report. Deputy Director Storr is filling in.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Chair Wecker said, Director Anderson won't be here today or tomorrow. He's in San Diego at a WAFWA meeting, a big part of which I think is meeting with the other states and with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Dan Ash and Robin Thorenson, on wolf issues. So thought it was pretty important at this point in time for those folks to get together and talk about where the federal that federal agency is going with their wolf decisions. My report's going to be pretty short today, primarily because it doesn't seem like it was that long ago when we met last, and we had the holiday season in between, so there's not a lot of new news. I think the director shared with the commission in the middle of December the outcome of the budget discussion. Legislature came to town for a couple of weeks in special session, came up with about $480 million in budget reductions, general fund reductions, about a third to a quarter of what they're going to have to come up with by the end of the special session. So the hard work is still to come on budget, and that's assuming that the February forecast doesn't make things worse. But, you know, another billion to a billion and a half in budget cuts will have to come out of the next regular session, which ends around the end of March, if it's on time. So the hard decisions that we talked about over the last couple of meetings for this agency are still out there. There's ongoing discussions about hatcheries, impacts to hatcheries, about our hydraulic project approval fee idea, about hydropower or wind power, cost recovery. Some of those ideas that were highlighted in the governor's proposal are still being worked and being talked about, and we'll just see where those go. The cuts that were made in the special session resulted in several million additional dollars removed from the agency's budget. Half of that or so was replaced with the aquatic lands enhancement account money. So in a lot of ways, that was a good thing, because those dollars, primarily coming from state aquatic land leases and geoduck duck farming, are more stable at this point in time, for sure, than the general fund is. So welcomed that fund shift, but we did see $1.1 million cut to six management positions, and we've got some flexibility and time to finalize those cuts. But that did happen. That was probably the largest impact to us as a result of that special session budget. More detail there if you're interested. Be happy to answer questions, but the director did send out a summary of all of that. And so we're waiting for the regular session to start, which will begin next week, and carrying forward those discussions that started in the special session.
Okay. Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Joe,
There's been some discussion in particularly editorials in the paper and so forth that people talk about cuts, but there's various definitions of cuts, some of which mean only reduction in the anticipated increase in state government. What is the definition of cuts relative to the department? I think I know the answer, but are they real cuts to our budget, or are they cuts in anticipated increases in the budget?
Well, the cuts that I've been talking about, Commissioner Perry, are usually around loss of general fund. Now, that can result in an immediate, you know, reduction in activity or loss of positions. For example, these six management positions. We will have six fewer WMS managers as a result of those cuts. Other cuts in general fund sometimes are replaced with other fund sources. And we saw that again with the ALEA exchange that went on. We've seen that in other instances with other fund sources in the past. So sometimes the activity will go forward, but it'll be funded with something else. And some of those, for example, 2 years ago, we saw a $3.6 million reduction in general fund for hatcheries that was replaced with wildlife fund dollars. And that replacement wasn't sustainable. It was a one-time. So there are cuts that take place to our general fund, and other funding situations arise to keep those activities in place at least temporarily. Another part of the story that complicates public understanding is that we've seen some growth on the federal side with some federal dollars. Now, you know, don't know how long that's going to last, but an example of that is the estuary work we're doing as a result of the Redden decisions on the Columbia River, where we have something like a $41 million five-year agreement, MOU, with the federal government, about $9 million a year in work going on estuary improvements. So one part of the house, especially general fund related, has shrunk. We expect it to continue to shrink. We're at about four sessions ago, we started at $110 million, and I think with this special session, we're down to around $66 million. So there's been real reductions in general fund, real loss of activity and functions there. Some of it shifted, though, to either other fund sources or federal dollars. So it's not a straightforward picture.
Thank you.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Joe, one of the issues with the governor changing our request and coming back and asking us to use some of our wildlife monies for non-wildlife policy or stakeholders' benefit kind of creates a argument or a conflict of policy for how we raise money, and this seems to have a pretty significant impact on our credibility as well as future fundraising. Are we looking at any ways to alleviate that, or alternatives to make that coincide with what our policies are?
We've spent a lot of time, Commissioner Duvia, over the last 4 years since the budget problems have hit, talking about especially our restricted accounts, 17 restricted wildlife accounts that are you know, in statute specified for certain uses. I think OFM is aware of that and tries very hard to honor that. If they don't, legislators hear about it, and so when you come out of the governor's budget discussion and enter into the Senate or the House, you know, constituents are almost always there to remind folks about those restrictions. We had a recent issue, that maybe this is what you're referring to, on transaction fee dollars. And again, these were dollars that we withheld from our wild system contractor due to poor performance. We had about $3 million in withheld payments, money they weren't going to get because they didn't meet the terms of the contract. And that was pretty attractive to budgeteers across the street when it came time to dealing with general fund reductions. And so about $1.5 million of that in the governor's proposal was put forward to replace hatchery reductions, if I remember right. And the controversial questions about whether that was an appropriate use, questions about credibility for the department and/or for the whole budgeting process, that's still out there, and that's why you didn't see that finalized in the special session budget. That discussion is still underway, and the points that you're making, at least as it refers to that particular proposal, are front and center. I think it's something we need to continuously reinforce, and we have to have, we have built and continue to remind ourselves internally just in terms of some discipline around those, so we can stand in front of the people that pay the funds and tell them where the money goes.
Well, I think that's really significant, not only in the possible precedent it sets, but also in terms of our credibility and what our consistency is going forward in requesting monies and then not necessarily do it. I'm sure on any exercise where we have a windfall or a benefit on a contract, we don't expect to have those benefits go somewhere else. So it's the same kind of concept. So it's, I think that's pretty sensitive area that we need to really be cautious of and look hard at, see if there's not some solutions to that one.
Agree. Okay.
Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious. I know in times of budget cuts, to have something on the table such as the Wolf Plan, where it's going to require more money from the department, and yet this is something that is just new into Washington. And when I talk to hunters or I talk to ranchers, and they're very concerned about certain aspects, and it's going to take money. It's going to take money, more money for biologists to keep track of wolves. It's going to take compensation money for ranchers. Is there a plan, or is there kind of a thought process on this whole horizon of, as we move into the wolves coming back into the state, the funds that will be necessary to do that?
Commissioner Kenney, that's a great question. In fact, it's a segue to one thing I wanted to bring up in the director's report. In short, we've got a request in front of the legislature, $350,000 for use of some special wildlife funds that are dedicated to endangered species recovery. What I was going to do as part of the director's report on two new pieces of information was to ask Nate Pamplin to come up and talk a little bit about what are we doing with wolves, especially the recent survey that was completed, but also sort of next steps as we move towards monitoring and implementation. And then I wanted to ask Guy Norman to come forward for 5 minutes on Columbia River Chinook projections, because there's some new information there that I'm sure the commissioner would find of interest. So if that's okay, I'd proceed with Nate.
Okay. I'm glad that you're doing this. Come on forward, Nate, because that was going to be something that I would bring up. I was planning on bringing up that we, as a commission, I think will want this kind of regular detailed reporting on the status of anything having to do with wolves. A number of us have been getting lots of feedback on the plan, some negative, some positive, but the concerns have not gone away. And we definitely want to be respectful of the concerns that are out there and want to stay in tune, stay abreast of the issue completely. So this is exactly what I had thought to ask for, and you anticipated it.
Great.
Commissioner Carpenter has something to add.
I just wanted to add, Joe, if I may. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know how difficult it is when you have budget constraints and things are going the wrong direction, and in business and certainly in government, there's a lot of damage control that goes on. You're trying to put fires out, and you're not necessarily always having an opportunity to look down the road. And I was talking to Chairperson Miranda at coffee this morning, I learned about the governor's agenda that she just spoke about. And I go back to, and I've dealt with this for many, many years in industry and business, that trying to fill the pipeline with customers, new customers, with youngsters coming up for the products that the department has to sell. Has there been any discussion internally in a proactive manner to try and figure out a way to market your product better to your customer base now and into the future? I think it's critical to establish some type of agenda in that fashion.
Yeah, great comment, Commissioner. We've had a number of initiatives over the last couple of years, from our lapsed angler approach to a variety of things we've done in the hunting area. If you look at the number of dollars we've generated over the last 10 to 15 years, we're essentially 100 base has gone down somewhat in terms of numbers of participants, but dollars collected have gone up. So a number of ways to maximize revenue, and it feels like we are at a point of having reached some kind of plateau, at least on the hunting side. And the youth piece, though, I don't know that we've done as much as we could do, and so I'll be interested in working on ways to do more of that. Marketing, one of the things we're considering is taking one of our existing vacancies and investing it more in marketing, maybe even hiring some expertise there. It's marketing from a business dollar generation point of view, but it's more than that. It's around creating credibility and creating interest in the things that we have to provide, and that ultimately results in funding. That's good, but the primary purpose would be around sustaining that legacy that we have in the state, and building participation in parts of the population that don't think about what we do as much as maybe they did in the past. So
a lifestyle, if you may.
A lifestyle. So we're thinking about different approaches there. Haven't done much on the youth side, or haven't done enough on the youth side. I think we've thought about it quite a bit, but.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing to that question. This is one part of the department that just always truly amazed me, is the hunter education parts, and they quote figures like 700 instructors throughout Washington, all volunteer. Something like 13,000 kids go through the program each year. Truly phenomenal effort. However, from what I understand, at least, I could have this somewhat wrong, but the recruitment into the actual hunter population is very small, and there's been some efforts to try through, I think maybe Master Hunter Program and so forth, to try to do some mentoring to get people actually, youth actually, into the hunting population. And I think that's all positive, but I think that's one area we could work on. But the number of people that go through that hunter education program is truly amazing. Also, I think we could do maybe a little more work on the appreciation side. The non-consumptive side, I think there's a lot of expansion we can do there. There's always the discussion of, well, how do you recover the costs and so forth. I think that's something that both the department and the commission needs to address a little more. But there actually is quite a bit in terms of youth going on, but I think we certainly could carry that significantly farther.
Commissioner Duvia, do you want to respond?
Just to maybe this is as much for the new commissioners, but really for all the commissioners. With the general fund pressure that we've had, I mean, we have cut programs around outreach, our salmon in the classroom, our, all of those, and it's painful to do for all the reasons we talked about. But I think if we pick up this discussion, if there's a new committee, it would be helpful for the commissioners to understand the choices we've had to make so you see why we went there and or why the legislature went there if we didn't. These kinds of programs, the outreach, education, trying to fill the pipeline, prospective, you know, programs are often the ones that get left behind when the things get tight. So it's been a real challenge for us.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Duvia?
Yes, I'd like to take just a second to just give a reinforcement to Commissioner Carpenter's comments. Marketing is a significant benefit to us and something we do poorly with. Raising fees and using justification that we haven't raised fees for 10 years is not very well received. So, and this ties into an area that I think a number of us commissioners have been concerned with and talking about, and that's our communication and how to make that a value added, a benefit kind of communication, and away from just reporting the name things that go on. And I think you'll see, for the sake of the new commissioners, that that aspect, with a declining budget, we must become more efficient. We must be more cognizant of what the citizens out there are getting and what they're paying for. So it's his points are well made, and I think you'll see that on the top of the ladder as we go through this year.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, you know, a lot of the conversations focused on increasing participation in hunting and fishing, and currently about 3% of our state participates in hunting and 7% in fishing, and 25-plus are actively engaged in wildlife watching. And really, I think the future of where we're going is not only maintaining and to go extent we can increasing the hunting and fishing, but also really having the department understand that when we did our survey of what people expect from the department, the majority that we got back was, you know protecting our fish and wildlife resources, dealing with our endangered species, and increasing wildlife watching opportunities. I think the challenge for us, as we've already mentioned, is how do we do that and remain fiscally in the black? But the dollars that this department can bring into the state from an ecotourism perspective are pretty darn big. That's a lot of what the governor's Get Out West is all about. And I really want to make sure that we focus as actively in increasing our wildlife watching opportunities as we do increasing hunting and fishing membership or participation. And I think it goes back to the conversation about the big tent, about not only how do we get those folks engaged, but how do we then figure out how we turn it into a mechanism by which we can support the department. So just sort of, that's Chuck's comments always, how are we going to pay for maintenance? Mine is going to be, how are we going to be evolving into the future to make sure that we're relevant to the overall population of this state in 20 years? Because if the trends continue with hunting and fishing, if we stick with them as recognizing those as our primary stakeholders and constituents, we're not going to have a whole broad base out there as in the future. So.
Okay, I'm going to provide a little bit of a segue into Nate's update for us, which is going back to the whole communications and outreach issue that we've started discussing here and the importance of marketing. We've described that in the past as as communications and outreach, PR. We've talked about the need to modernize, get up to speed with social media and other things, understanding how difficult it is to do anything new when we're being reduced in size of staffing and resources. But that is the challenge before us, to reform, become efficient, and be contemporary in the ways that we market. I was going through my bookshelf, cleaning out some of the old notebooks that I have from past years of the commission, and came across this communications and outreach scoping document from 2008. in which we really started to make an attempt at figuring out how to do a better job in our outreach. Certainly needs some updating in light of the reductions in our resources, but I wanted to bring that forward to look at that again. It's disheartening to make a start at doing something that's so critical and so important and then not following through to any real useful conclusion. I hate to see that happen. So I was thinking we should pick up where we left off here in some fashion. I don't know what at this point, but this is a subject that we've been raising, different members of the commission has been raising for as long as I've been on the commission, this need to communicate very effectively. And one thought I had was that the wolf issue presents the biggest challenge I think we've ever faced in terms of communication and bringing the resources of the agency together in a way that the public respects. And the challenge of forming a credible relationship with the livestock owners and the hunters who feel most threatened by the presence of wolves. It's just enormously complex, difficult challenge. So I thought maybe that would be a case study. Maybe that would be the pilot of trying to do something that's truly impressive and high quality in terms of our outreach. Because we can't just tell staff, go and do everything perfectly across the board. Nobody's perfect. But that is such a critical, important issue that maybe that's where we direct some emphasis. And I know Nate has done some new things on that score, so that was the segue part of what I was talking about. So let's hear from Nate.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, and Deputy Director Storr. My name is Nate Pamplin. I'm the Assistant Director of the Wildlife Program. And Deputy Director Storr asked me to come in and provide you a summary of our annual survey for wolves in Washington, as well as I'm going to just touch base on a few activities that we have lined up for 2012. We just adopted the plan last month. I recognize that already feels like that was a year ago. What have we done? And so I want to try to assure you of some of the activities that are front and center for me and the wildlife program. First off, the review. We have five confirmed packs in Washington. Pack is defined as two or more animals traveling together. Our recovery objectives are successful breeding pairs. And so we do an annual count, and this is throughout other Western states or Great Lakes states, of doing the annual count in December to verify, are there two adults with at least two pups that have survived through the end of the calendar year? So that's the recovery objective target that we're looking for. And I'll run down the, and then we submit that information to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to track as part of the Northern Rocky Mountain DPS, as well as for the wolf status for the western two-thirds of the state. In the eastern Washington recovery area, we have three wolf packs. The Diamond Pack, located in Ponderay County and spills over into Idaho. We counted 10 animals, 7 adults and 3 pups. We did have one radio caller female get captured on the Idaho side by a lawful trapper as part of the Idaho fishing game trapping season. And we also have one radio collared female that's missing. That leaves one radio collared female still within the pack. So that was counted as a successful breeding pair. The Salmo Pack, located in Ponderay County and spills into British Columbia, has 3 adults, and we did not observe any pups, so this did not count as a successful breeding pair. And the third pack within the Eastern Washington Recovery Area is the Smack Out Pack, located in Stevens and Ponderay County. This was counted as a successful breeding pair with 2 adults and 3 pups. Moving to Central Washington, to the North Cascades recovery area, the Lookout Pack has 2 animals in it. Neither are radio collared. No pups were observed. and then the Tiana Way PAC located in Kittitas County, lookouts in Okanagan. Tiana Way PAC located in Kittitas County was counted as a successful breeding pair with 3 adults and 4 pups. Bringing the total for the minimum estimated pack size to 27 wolves in Washington, in full recognition there are other wolves in the state. Either it's transient animals, the animals that Commissioner Perry referenced of activity down in the Blues or Northeast or in the Hozamine area. We've had field trail camera photos from the Colville Confederated Tribes presented to the commission in October, I believe was when we were in, or November when we were in Spokane, that had photos. Got a meeting lined up with them in January to talk about what kind of memorandum of agreement could we come to for leveraging resources to do some additional field scouting there. So a lot of other activity. In general, once a pack becomes established and you get somewhere north of 4 or 5 individuals, they're using an area, it becomes pretty aware from us. And this is talking to sister agencies in Idaho in Montana. When it's the 1s or 2s or 3s and they're moving around large home ranges, it's hard to pick up to observe them. We have our winter ungulate surveys coming online, so we'll certainly have biologists up in the air looking for other tracks and animal sightings that can help us. There is some field activity this winter with folks going out and looking for tracks and, of course, responding to sightings from the public, but really our bulk of our trapping operations will begin this spring and summer. And that's handy because wolf territory sizes kind of shrink down and we're able to go in and follow up and be more successful in terms of our capture operations. As far as for some other of the activities that are coming up, and I was planning on going through a little bit more detail at the Wildlife Committee meeting this evening, but this month we're continuing to finalize and incorporate the edits you made to the Wolf Plan last month. So we'll submit, get that through Director's Office review, and then submit that to the printer for publication. We're Director Anderson's currently down at WAFWA talking with, going to have a sidebar with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Again, what happens for the western two-thirds of Washington as part of their status review? Really important considerations for us because of the federal ESA listing as endangered for the western two-thirds somewhat ties our hands on some of the management tools that we've incorporated within our wolf plan. Of course, ledge session just is going to start on Monday. I know of one bill that comes out associated with mammalian apex predators. I suspect that there was going to be others, as well as our own carnivore legislation, so that'll be a pretty busy winter. We have a training that's currently scheduled for mid-March for our enforcement and wildlife staff. We're inviting Carter Niemeyer, who's the retired Animal Wildlife Services expert on livestock depredations. We've had this course before. We invite our co-managers to that meeting to bring us all up to speed, as well as we've been working on our internal protocols on how we respond to both wolf sightings and wolf depredations, making sure that staff understand that this is an extremely high priority response, and then here's the protocols that we'll employ. For funding requests, we have two primary requests forward. Deputy Director Storr mentioned the request in the governor's budget for the use of restricted account authority. Here we have the revenue already built up, so-called in the piggy bank, but we need permission or authority from the legislature to be able to spend that money. And then we have a request into the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for fiscal year 12 for $255,000. So we're continuing to work that fund source as well. I'm just reviewed this morning the position description for another wolf trapping specialist. We'll get the recruitment out today or tomorrow or on Monday, very soon. Try to have somebody on board by March 1. Again, then we'll have two wolf trappers running full time through the spring and summer, as well as those staff are. It's not just two. It's augmented by all the district wildlife biologists and certainly enforcement officers on the dangerous wildlife reporting. And then internally, I'm looking at ways to create more efficiencies within headquarters and looking at a carnivore section to kind of collapse real similar issues and the same kind of staff with similar expertise. And so that's more of an internal administrative issue, but one that brings about some important changes on my perspective, as well as looking for those partnership opportunities, in particular with the tribes. We have the meeting I referenced with Colville Tribe. We need to connect with Kalispell and Spokane as well. Nez Perce down in the Blues in Idaho, they are the go-to folks for a number of years on wolf population monitoring, and so we'd want to try to tap into that expertise for assistance in the Blues. So that's
Deputy Director Storr, did you want to add something?
I said this sort of in passing in response to Commissioner Carpenter's statement a while ago, but we are also looking hard at establishing a new position involved in outreach and connecting with the public on a number of sensitive issues. And your suggestion, Madam Chair, about maybe making wolves a case study in that is you know, one of the ideas we were kicking around too. So that's another position we'd like to move forward on in the near term. So, yeah.
Commissioner Jennings,
just a process question. When you know, identifying breeding pairs is pretty key to be able to move through the delisting process, and it's a lot easier to look for successful breeding pairs where we know we have a well-established pack and radio-collared individuals, and so it makes sense to put a lot of energy looking in those areas. But when you're doing your winter ungulate surveys this month, and you come across, and from the air we see, you know, three adults and four pups running after them. That's after December 31st. But how do we count that as a pack for last, as a breeding pair for last year? Do we not get credit for that as far as moving forward? And we don't have to talk about it there, but it sort of raised that question to me. Is sort of, you know, we have this arbitrary date of December 31st, but a lot of our best encounters are going to be in the winter when we're doing these surveys. So this is a process.
Okay. Madam Chair, Commissioner Jennings, during the deliberations last fall, I know that there was a lot of interest, in particular because successful breeding pair is our recovery target, is our ability to detect whether or not that confirmed pack was a successful breeding pair. And in December, it was fairly straightforward. Getting up in the plane, flying over it, the key is to have that radio mark out there. So we're honing right in on where the animals are resting. We're looking right down. You can see the pups playing around. Yep, those are pups. Here's the adults. Here's the minimum count, and we move on. I don't know as far as how we've treated, the broader wildlife management community has handled observing additional packs in the winter and how that gets accounted towards the annual count, whether it's the previous year or the next year. So I'd want to circle back with you on that. But certainly they're counted, and then that gives us an area to focus for the spring trapping effort.
Thank you. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Nate, this ties into what we previously talked about, communication. And I know the press release on our survey came out. And I think this is typical of what we're talking about, is that I don't think anybody that's on the commission thinks we have 27 wolves in the state of Washington.
Right.
That's what the press release said, and that's what the people think we think. So the perception out there is we have no knowledge of what's on the ground. And to, even though we read the fine lines and say these are collared and identified and countable, the working person out there that doesn't eat and sleep this stuff thinks that very negatively about the quality of our biologists, the staff. It kind of makes them think, well, you got a bunch of people sitting in Olympia that have no idea what's going on out here. And I think if we would have communicated that we have a significant entry of wolves, but we only have three breeding pair that really are accountable for our study. We need your help in getting more reporting so we can identify these things quicker and use that. It won't even then quote what the delisting criteria was correctly. It just mentioned that we had to have 15 for 3 years. It didn't go into that. If we get to 18, we can do it quicker. So that kind of communication really upset the public. I mean, it was not one positive person I talked to that read that and felt that we were doing a good job. So I think that's why we're talking about we got a new plan. We're out identifying them. There's lots of people sending them in on trail cameras and stuff. And like Commissioner Jennings said, I don't think we flew over it. We have a place called the Wedge up there. I have probably somewhere between 20 and 30 wolves identified up there on trail cameras and cattle ranchers tracking them. I doubt if we even flew over the Wedge in looking for wolves. I mean, or we could say that we did that, we'd get some credibility. But the perception is that we have a number of callers out there and we fly out and radio in on the callers and we go home. So that's how we want to work with you and work on this plan so that we can take those reporting systems and let the public know that, you know, we need their help. This is what we're doing. Help us report these and get on top of it. But that reporting process of just putting out cold, hard statements and numbers isn't doing the department much good.
Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd really like to second what Commissioner Duvia just said, because I've heard the same types of things. And the other thing is a fear that if we don't keep a good track of the numbers, the true numbers, it'll get out of hand quickly. You know, there's that real heartfelt fear that we can't catch up. You know, if it gets out of hand and it really is affecting livestock owners or ungulate populations detrimentally, you know, the only thing that to help in that regards is to have really as accurate accounts as we can of where they're at. You know, and I've heard of other locations, and I'm curious too, you know, when we start hearing reports, you know, coming in from hunters and whatnot about a wolf pack in the Blues, yeah, should there be dollars somehow aimed at those places, which gains the public trust? You know, you heard us, you listened to us. We've got some people looking at that with as good a technology as we have. And I know we can't, you know, put a biologist and a trapper on every sighting, but at some point, the Wedge area or the Palouse, you know, there might, or the Blues, there might be a need to readjust some direction of dollars and time.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up, but since how it has been brought up, I would also concur with Commissioner Duvey's comments. It really bothers me because I have a long-term association with the department, and I hate to see, I know what the biologists do, and I know how hard they work, and there does seem to be a lot of disrespect because of some of those reports. But I won't go any further on that. I did want to ask one brief question, though, that I've got a number of times, and I can't answer it. And how does one document a breeding pair? What's the criteria used to document a pack, say? How is that done exactly? So it gets on the record as a documented pack.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Perry, it's a pack is two or more wolves traveling together. So you have verification that you have two wolves, then that counts as a pack, and we would include it.
I guess what I was saying, how is that verification done? I mean, what's acceptable and what isn't in terms of verification?
Verification would come from a biologist going out on site, or if we had other photographs that showed that, yes, this is the composition for that pack and those were indeed wolves. In certain areas where we had, for instance, in north central Washington, for the Tianaway pack, we wanted to confirm that they were wolves. and not some hybrid cross. And so sometimes there's a capture, getting the genetics verification that those are wild wolves, and then going forward with the announcement. And then the successful breeding pair is that winter count.
Thank you.
Okay, my question has to do with that, too. Since we've been following, it seems to me, this convention of breeding pairs being the operative criteria for recovery, and that is more challenging, is more expensive, is more difficult. Is there another category we could introduce without disturbing that basic system that we need to measure progress towards our recovery objectives? Can we develop another category that shows that we respect the reports coming in? Say we call them unconfirmed but credible observations, and have that in our press release too. So we get to Commissioner Duvia's point of anticipating that there will be skepticism about our confirmed numbers, and you made it clear that this is minimum.
Correct.
This is minimum known, minimum confirmed. This isn't what's out there. And I think the press release included a quote from Rocky saying, "We know there are more out there." But if we could put some tentative numbers that we're not willing to say are confirmed, but suggest to the public that we realize that there's quite a few individuals out there because we're getting this number of reported sightings, I think that would go a ways towards resolving this problem. Nate?
Madam Chair, to try to address kind of the broad suite of comments, I wholeheartedly agree. In terms of our ability and the transparency to get information in from the public feeling comfortable reporting the sightings in a timely manner, staff following up and confirming those sightings, we have a statutory requirement to post dangerous wildlife sightings on our website. That's currently going forward. But even something I've been visiting with staff about, having the map of here's the confirmed packs, here's the question marks of here's where we have seen, you know, kind of the next level of here's wolf tracks, here's some credible sightings, here's the public sightings and where they're dispersed, and having an online web reporting form in addition to our wolf hotline. And so we've spent so much time right now focusing on the plan development, that all the feedback that we're talking about is exactly what's outlined in the outreach chapter of the Wolf Plan, and we're going to be shifting wholeheartedly into plan implementation. And the outreach component, the reporting of wolf sightings and the follow-up is a fundamental piece, especially in these early years of wolves coming back into Washington.
Okay. I want to then follow up with another aspect of this, and I don't remember exactly what's in the plan regarding how staff will collect information from the citizens, but we're definitely hearing that there's a reluctance to report because a number of people have felt that their information is not viewed as credible by staff, and that they're treated with disrespect. They're interrogated in a way that signals they start off with no credibility. So one aspect of this, and I don't know whether that's really happening, you know, people's perceptions are all different, but it seems to me that as part of this emphasis on outreach for the Wolf Plan implementation, we are going to need to make sure staff are treating people with extreme politeness, the kind of quality of interactions that are the highest quality, and it's because there's the sensitivity about this is, as you know, through the roof. I think we do need to ask a lot of hard questions of people who are reporting sightings in order to differentiate the not credible with the credible. I mean, that is an important differentiation that requires some degree of questioning. But before you start that questioning, realize that people are going to see it as the third degree. They're going to see it as this agent of the state asking them all these questions for no apparent reason. And so I think it needs to, any interaction needs to start with this. Here's why we have to do this. We have to differentiate. And maybe you're already doing that, but maybe there's a little bit of training that you can add for field staff to make sure that they are super polite, super respectful. I think that'll help. Commissioner Duvia?
This will be real short, Madam Chair. Thank you. But Nate and I have talked about this a little bit, but and we will talk about it more in the committee tonight. But I've been working with the Chief Bjork and Stevens County Sheriff and County Commissioners, and one of the real prototype things that we're going to try and set up and experiment is that if we can get everybody just to call in to dispatch through a 911 number or through a dispatch number, that person will then route it to appropriate agent. But it will automatically be logged in on a topographical map, and it'll be cumulatively, so we'll get a printout at the end of the month, every call that came in that 30 days, and we'll have an aggregate one come in where we are year to date on a topographical map basis, which the counties, most of them have now, and it's not going to be little of any money. We just got to pay for a little bit of the 911. So this is something that then they are to send that to Nate and to the chief and to the commission every month to see what kind of activity we've got and try to get the community just to log in and get them dispatched. So then we can see how many ones were confirmed, how many ones were investigated, how many calls did we have. And I think that would build tremendous credibility and just that they get recognition that they did report. So that's a big step. I think we just got to, I think we can maybe move this pretty much statewide.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing that you said really piqued my interest, and it's a desire I have for the department to move forward on from an IT application perspective, and that is that, as you called it, a wolf sighting reporting application. In my view, we should be developing a wildlife reporting application, and that really, again, gets the citizens reporting of a diversity of wildlife species to us. So we start to get, and again, it's unconfirmed, but it is an anecdotal, but the numbers build up over time. So statistically, you start saying, well, if 17 different people saw this particular type of snake, for example, in this area, maybe it really is there, we should go look for it. But it also gives a reason for non-consumptive users to start interacting with the department and recognizing that, in fact, we're here for them as well as just for the hunting, fishing crowd. So I really like the idea of the wolf sighting reporting application, but I hope if we move forward on that, we do it in a much more broad fashion so we can record a variety of wildlife species.
It's a real challenge for interacting and following up on sightings. An example of a really great sighting would be the when, the who, the where. It was last night. It was this morning. This is what we saw. These were the colorations. Here was the types of markings or the length of the legs, and here's what the head looked like. And you know, and we have this complete way to say yes, that does warrant dispatching a staff. Stop what you're doing. Dispatch the person to go and investigate that site. Oftentimes, a sighting might be stopping in to buy my hunting license and want to let you know I saw a bear 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is a data point, but how does that, how do we include that? And we sit and we'll listen and engage, and staff do an incredible job of being polite with interacting. We spend hours on the phone with hunters or with the public talking about where to go or listening to what they've seen, capturing that in our notes as far as, okay, this is something else with the next time we're out on a survey, we ought to be looking for this type of information. But there's just a wide range on the types of quality of information that comes in on a sighting. So I just want to acknowledge that it's really difficult. It's a challenge that's in front of us, and on wolves, we're my job performance, the bio's job performance is out in the public every day, and this is something we're trying to improve.
Yeah, for sure. Good. Did you want to say a little bit about the new approach to PR outreach, the person that you're bringing into the team?
Well, I've a couple things. We've had in the wildlife diversity division, essentially the biodiversity division, a small outreach team. I moved them to where they're reporting to me, and broadening where they're working on outreach activities on lands and game as well as diversity. So we've got efforts where we've been trying to reconnect with traditional constituents as well as some of the citizen science components. We have a new volunteer coordinator to try to partner opportunities, and I'll touch on that a little bit more this afternoon. I'm okay. Providing an overview of the wildlife program, and we'll touch on it.
Great.
More then.
Okay, that's terrific. Thanks. Deputy Director Storr?
Madam Chair, then, thanks, Nate. Just to finish off the director's report, I wanted to have Guy Norman, our Region 5 regional manager, give the commission a few minutes of detail on Columbia River Chinook projections.
Thank you, Deputy Director Storr, Madam Chair, Commissioners, good morning. I'm Guy Norman, Regional Director out of Vancouver. No wolves as of yet in my region, so I'm going to talk about salmon. We're under the fourth year of a five-year commission policy regarding management of spring Chinook, and so we do have commission policy direction relative to regulating our spring Chinook consistent with the run size that's forecasted each year, and also consistent with conservation objectives associated with the Endangered Species Act. But I thought that the commission in the past has had great interest in spring Chinook management and would be interested in our forecast for this year. That the USV Oregon Technical Advisory Committee just submitted last month. And while I'm at it, they also submitted projections for summer Chinook and sockeye, and I can give you an update on that as well. So for Upper Columbia Spring Chinook, the forecast for 2012 is 314,200, which is the fourth highest return on record back to 1938. That compares with a return of 221,200 last year. Of that 314,000, it's projected that just over 32,000 will return to the Upper Columbia, which is above East Rapids Dam, and 168,000 will return to the Snake River, to the various tributaries in the Snake. The rest of that run will return to tributaries and hatcheries below McNary Dam.
Commissioner Carpenter has a question.
Guy, okay, can we get this in a written format?
I do have a one-pager here that I can make copies of and give to the commission here today.
That would be appreciated.
You bet.
I'd be interested.
Okay, yeah, circulate it.
Just before you go, can you give us the number again for the Snake River?
So the Snake River forecasted return is 168,000.
Thank you.
For summer Chinook, also above average forecast, 91,200, and that compares with a 2011 return of 80,600. And for sockeye, we have a new all-time record forecast for Columbia River sockeye, 462,000, and that compares with 187,300 in 2011. and 187,000 was way above average as well. So 462 is by far way above what we've seen in the Columbia in the past. So that's the good news. The other side of that is that of that 462,000, 431,300 will be returning to the Okanagan River to the area that originates in Canada. That's a Canadian run. And only 28,800 are forecasted to return to the Wenatchee River. And the escapement goal in the Wenatchee, I believe, is 23,000. So it does not really leave a whole lot of room for a fishery in Lake Wenatchee. Expand on that a little bit. We've got a 8-10 year track record now of a fairly static Wenatchee run, actually a declining trend in the last few years, but the Okanagan run has just exploded in terms of productivity, and it's kind of carrying the load for sockeye.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you. That all sounds really encouraging. With those very high numbers, what, in terms of forecasting that, what was the primary determining factor that raised those numbers so high?
Commissioner Perry, the primary factor was the second highest jack return on record last year. So the age 3 component of the spring Chinook run, which predicts the age 4 component the next year, was extremely high.
Do ocean conditions figure into this as well? Is there any way to predict that?
Yeah, I think ocean conditions are a very significant factor. I think what we've seen here in the last few years where we've had above average runs of spring Chinook is a combination of increased survival through the hydro system associated with decisions that have been made through the court system primarily, and then some more better productivity in the ocean, I think, is a big factor as well.
Thank you.
Commissioner Mankin?
Thank you, Guy. One other question. Was the number for the summers 91,200? Is that what you said?
Correct.
Okay. Of that number, how many are projected to be natural fish and how many are projected to be hatchery fish?
I don't have the natural projection for summer Chinook. That'll come later when the Technical Advisory Committee breaks it down further. I've got the natural projections for spring Chinook today, but not summer Chinook.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I recall a couple years ago in which our projections were so large that we couldn't even believe them, but they were based on jack returns, too. And we didn't want to let that run go by without harvesting what we could, and yet we just couldn't even, we couldn't believe the numbers. And it turned out that the numbers were way off. Jack returns not being as reliable a factor for making projections as we thought in the past. So is this going to be another one of those years in which we raise expectations only to disappoint people? Why do we even believe jack numbers anymore?
Well, Madam Chair, I hope not. I think the year you're talking about was a couple years ago where we had the highest return of jacks on record that was almost 4 times what we'd ever seen in the past. It was 80,000 jacks, if I recall. And went through a number of processes to report to predict that run. As I recall, if we used traditional predictors, it would have said almost 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up predicting somewhere around 470,000, and the actual return was about 350,000, so it was quite a bit lower than predicted. Over the last couple of years, the Technical Advisory Committee has worked with a variety of outside entities, including University of Washington professors and others, looking at ocean variability and some other factors, and they have included that input in what they're predicting here. In fact, there's a lot of predictors that say it could be quite a bit higher. And so in my mind, I think it's a fairly conservative prediction relative to that experience they had before. I think it's probably real.
Yeah, and I remember that staff recommended taking a conservative approach to that enormous prediction and restrained the impulses of the commission to be generous and develop some fairly liberal seasons. He cautioned against that, and it turned out, I think you were the director and the staff's recommendations were spot on. So we just pretty much nailed utilizing as much as we could.
Madam Chair, if I may, I think as we move forward here, there's a January 10th advisory committee meeting, and so the recreational advisors will meet, and that's where we'll get recommendations for how you set seasons, you know, within the policy and the USV Oregon agreement, and then we've got a January 26th compact hearing to actually set the seasons with Oregon. And in that USV Oregon policy, or management agreement, excuse me, there's a required 30% buffer on the run. So we'll actually go into the season managing for, instead of 314,000, about 220,000 until we get a run size update. So we've got that built-in buffer as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that saved us last time. Commissioner Schmitten, and then Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. My jaw didn't drop when I heard the Lake Wenatchee forecast because I've been aware of this. And I want to actually say, first of all, that a lot of work is going on. I want to appreciate the Lower Columbia River staff and the Region 2 fishery staff that are looking into why the decline when the other side, the Okanagan, is exploding with growth. There's some studies being looked at on nutrition, predation, a very close examination on harvest right now. So work is going on and a lot of effort to, the worst thing we could see is for this run to become endangered or listed. It would affect all fishing then that went into the Wenatchee River, perhaps even in the Columbia. So we really need to be on top of this. Thanks.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Well, I think these numbers are very exciting. One bit of caution that I'm a little bit concerned about is I have to travel Monday to the Pacific Salmon Commission meeting in Portland with the Canadians, and I'm really happy to hear that Director Anderson is now going to chair that. The Canadians, when they get these numbers, if they don't already have them, will be really licking their chops and polishing their propellers on their troll fishery. And they're always a little bit delinquent in or frankly, and that guy, as you know, they're very delinquent in letting us know what their fishing regimes are going to be doing during the seasons. And we have had to always comply with our rules and complete North of Falcon and PFMC process, establish our seasons prior to knowing what the Canadians are going to do. And there's a little bit of risk in that, and I hope with Director Anderson's involvement there, we can leverage the Canadians to be a little bit more timely and letting us know what their fishing structures are so that we can be prudent and have no overfishing on these fish and continue to grow the spawning availability.
Anything else? Commissioner Mankin, did you?
Just one question. On the productivity of the Okanagan stock sockeye versus the Wenatchee stock sockeye, do we have any information as to where they go in the ocean? Do they have separate distributions in the ocean? And is that kind of information included in the modeling?
Commissioner Megan, I'm not aware of specific information that differentiates the migratory patterns of the Okanagan stock and the Wenatchee stock. I do know that in general, from what we know about interceptions of sockeye outside, they're far offshore up north in the, you know, off the Aleutian Islands, kind of an interception incidental to ground fisheries, for example. Not at a high level, but that general migratory pattern. But I think the assumption is that both have a similar pattern of ocean migration. The Canadians have done some work over the last few years in terms of habitat, opening up a significant amount of more habitat in the Nursery Lake, for example, and some other restoration work. And I suspect that's a big factor here.
Okay. just a couple minutes.
I don't want to get ahead of you, Guy. But were you going to do an Upriver Bright? Give us those numbers, or was that not something that's available yet?
Commissioner Carpenter, those actually come out before the North of Falcon process, so somewhere around early, mid-February. The staff does do sort of a general update, but not specific, in December. And as I recall, that update is something similar to what we've seen the last couple of years, which is, you know, good Upriver Bright runs.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Guy. That completes, sorry, Commissioner Schmidt.
Before we do close, I have a request for the Deputy Director. Joe, could we start our legislative reports as soon as possible, preferably even with our phone conference call? And what I'm thinking is that I think the Commission would be interested, I certainly would be, a summary of proposed legislation that affects the Department directly. And there's a few of them out there already.
That'd be great, Commissioner Schmidt. And we, I think, historically have made that a standing part of at least this formal meeting and have included it in conference calls, so we'll plan on that.
Great.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know a few years ago we had an update, I think, every Friday. And I thought that was extremely informative to follow that and be able to answer questions from the public and so forth. Whether with your staff you could reestablish that or not, I don't know, but it was extremely helpful to me.
We do have, we just started with a special session, actually, inviting some interested stakeholders to sit with us every Friday. In fact, have one this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Where, you know, anybody that's interested can get on the line, and we sort of go through the bills we're tracking or rumors we're hearing, and asking the participants for, you know, what are you hearing? So just trying to keep fresh in terms of the latest with the legislative session. So we'll do that.
Yeah, there's also a coalition or consortium of conservation organizations that do a similar thing in organizing their agenda for the session. Would be good to reach out to them. We're trying to, you know, bring the constituents together.
We have consumptive and non-consumptive stakeholders on this call on Friday, so.
Good. All right. Okay, we've reached break. So let's come back at 11:15. Thanks, everyone.